Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, and it's a slightly double-barreled good. We're just going to mention in passing that there's a new Bloomberg poll out in Florida that shows Donald Trump up 2 points, which has to make his campaign very, very happy today, if it's anywhere close to being right. And Marco Rubio is also very happy if this poll is anywhere close to being right, because it's got him up 10 points just a day after we had the Cook Political Report suggesting that he could very much be in trouble of losing that seat. And there have also been other polls out there suggesting that the race is much tighter. So we'll see in the coming days and ultimately on November 8th which polls are right. Jim, real quick, your reaction to that.
You know, I've been telling people that you can't just arbitrarily disregard the polls. You can't just say that all the ones showing bad news for your guy are fake or rigged or nonsense, and that the ones that show your guy in good shape are true and honest and you know, accurate and the best ones. But I know where that instinct comes from, don't I? Greg, Rubio's up 10. That looks like a good poll to me. Yeah, I like that one. We'll see how it shakes out. The early voting numbers in Florida were not looking good for Republicans as a whole. Obviously, these were talking about registered Republicans. We don't know how the independents are voting, whether Republicans are voting for a particular Republican candidate. But, you know, this is the time of year to sweat. So, you know, leave it all on the field, guys, because I believe last I checked this morning, we're now past 10 million early votes have already been cast across the country. And I think we're past 1 million votes in Florida now.
Wow. Yeah, it is piling up already. So let's move on to the beefier good martini. And Jim, I believe it was in 2015 that this issue first came to the attention of President Obama in an interview, and that was whether or not he was aware of Hillary Clinton's private server and the emails that she was getting for government work through that private server. That all came out in early 2015, along with the Clinton cash allegations and then the private server revelations. And here's the question from Bill Plante of CBS News to President Obama.
Mr. President, when did you first learn that Hillary Clinton used an email system outside the U.S. government for official business while she was Secretary of State?
At the same time, everybody else learned it through news reports.
Well, that didn't go over too well inside Democratic circles. We know this now thanks to WikiLeaks. That was March 7th, 2015. And this email's at 6:33. Not sure what time that interview aired, but I'm guessing it's pretty quick after that. This is from Josh Schwerin, and he's sending it to Jennifer Palmieri and Nick Merrill and a couple other people. It says, Jen, you probably have more on this, but it looks like POTUS just said he found out HRC was using her personal email when he saw it on the news. And then you've got Cheryl Mills jumping on this line saying, we need to clean this up. He has emails from her. They do not say state.gov. So, Jim, either he just didn't check his emails that closely, or more likely, he knew about this all along.
I don't know about you, Greg. I always bet on lying. that seems like the easiest, safest bet in these circumstances. Yeah, this always kind of defied credulity, going back to that Obama statement of wait a minute, you can't tell me that at no point in 4 years of her being Secretary of State that they never emailed each other once. I'm just not buying that. And then the next thing would be that, and he never noticed that it was, you know, at clintonemail.com and it wasn't state.gov. Look, I realize he's a busy man. Maybe he's not, you know. In fact, there's some argument to be made, Greg, particularly as we look at Obamacare. He was never really a detail guy. Barack Obama was never a guy who had that Sherlock Holmes-type mind and that steel trap memory where every little detail was instantly accessible. No, it's a good chance maybe he overlooked it. But the idea that he had no idea she was using a private email server strains credulity. And it's just kind of a little amusing to see that it strained credulity in the Clinton camp, too. When even loyal Democrats are looking at that and saying, oh, come on, nobody believes that. We can kind of chuckle and say, okay, you know, he is exactly who we thought he is. He will offer that lie that nobody, he kind of knows nobody in the room is going to believe him, but nobody can disprove him. So he'll go with it and, you know, wait for the news cycle to pass.
Yeah, and it's interesting revelation, as you point out in the top item of the Morning Jolt today, that this is not the only email out there where people have less than lovely and lauding things to say about Hillary Clinton, even people that are very much in her corner. You've got Neera Tanden, a longtime Podesta friend, who at one point says Hillary Clinton just wants to get away with it. Another time, Podesta wrote to Tanden, most of that has to do with terrible decisions made pre-campaign, but a lot has to do with her instincts. And Tanden responded, almost no one knows better than me that her instincts can be terrible. And then you also point out that Colin Powell, whose emails were hacked earlier this year, had some less than charitable things to say about her, and now he's going to vote for her, big surprise. So even the people that are pulling the lever for Hillary Clinton and even working for her know behind the scenes exactly what we're getting if she becomes president.
You know, Greg, you could do a really good attack ad just quoting all of Hillary Clinton's endorsers, friends, supporters, allies. Deep down, when they think the microphones are off, when they think no one's watching, they see the exact same flaws the rest of us do. They're just not willing to acknowledge it in public. And so you could use this and you could make a really devastating ad. Just saying, you know, Hillary Clinton, her judgment is bad. Or Hillary Clinton, corrupt and greedy, to quote the Colin Powell email. You're really good if the Republican nominee did that, wouldn't it, Greg?
There are also Obama ads from 2008 that it would be absolutely devastating. I don't know if there are legal reasons why you can't use those for any reason, but there's Michelle Obama speeches from 2008, just withering criticism of the Clintons that could have easily been turned around, but for whatever reason, never used in this general election cycle. So
well, she could just turn around and try adopting them and say, Hillary Clinton, she's likable enough.
That's right. All right, on to the bad martini now. And Jim, there are moments throughout this year where I think you and I have both said, man, I just can't wait for this to be over. And last night is one of them. Last night, Megyn Kelly on her Fox News Channel show had as a guest former House Speaker Newt Gingrich, who, as just about everyone knows, is an ardent Donald Trump supporter. I don't know if it was just before that or earlier on in the program for sure. Megyn Kelly had Mike Pence on and she was going over some of the Trump allegations about the women. So Newt didn't like the fact that Megyn Kelly started asking him about that as well. We've got some rather extended clips here as this conversation evolved and devolved. Here's the first excerpt.
The three major networks spent 23 minutes attacking Donald Trump that night and 57 seconds on Hillary Clinton's secret speeches. You don't think this is a scale of bias worthy of Pravda and Izvestia? I mean, you want to know why Donald Trump's had a rough time?
If Trump is a sexual predator, that is...
He's not a sexual predator.
Okay,
you
that's
can't
your
say
opinion.
That.
I'm
you
not taking not a position on
You could not defend that
it.
Statement.
I'm
sick and tired of
it.
People like you using language that's inflammatory, that's not true.
Excuse me, Mr. Speaker.
Donald Trump has no idea
whether it's true or not. What we know is that
neither,
there are at
neither
least...
Neither do you.
That's right, and I'm not taking a position on it,
unlike
you.
Yes, you are. When you use the words, you took a position.
So what
I think
I
it's very unfair of you to do that, Megan.
Incorrect.
I think that is exactly the bias people are upset by.
I think that your defensiveness on this may speak volumes, sir.
No,
what I said
let me just
is
suggest
if,
to you.
No, no, no. Let me make my point, and then I'll give you the floor.
So then Megyn rehashes the story of the tape and Trump's denial that he ever actually did any of those things and then the women that came out afterwards, and that led to this.
So it's worth 23 minutes of the three networks to cover that story, and Hillary Clinton in a secret speech in Brazil to a bank that pays her $225,000 saying her dream is an open border where 600 million people could come to America. That's not worth covering.
That is worth covering.
When you want to go back through the tapes of your show recently, you are fascinated with sex and you don't care about public policy.
Me?
Now that's
really?
What I get out of watching you tonight.
You know what? Mr. Speaker, I'm not fascinated by sex, but I am fascinated by the protection of women.
And then Newt wanted to have Megyn Kelly use the language she used on Trump on the former president, Bill Clinton.
Do you want to comment on whether the Clinton ticket has a relationship to a sexual predator?
We on the Kelly file have covered that story as well, sir. I will tell you the
polls. No, I just want to hear you use the words. I want to hear your words, Bill Clinton, sexual predator. I dare you. Say Bill Clinton, sexual predator.
Mr. Speaker,
disbarred
we've covered...
Disbarred by the Arkansas
me,
bar? Disbarred by the
Excuse
Arkansas
me.
Bar.
Excuse
$850,000 penalty?
Excuse me, sir. We on the Kelly file have covered the Clinton matter as well.
And then a few seconds later, the interview ended with both of them encouraging the other to get therapy for anger issues. So, Jim, Newt does have a point that other issues have gotten buried with the coverage, but his demeanor in this interview is appalling. Megyn Kelly obviously spending a lot of time on it, and I just want both of them to go away.
I was just about to say, Greg, I don't think I've ever watched or listened to a conversation where I agreed with most of the fundamental points being made by both figures and walked away liking both of them less. For starters, Greg, let's remember we should never, ever use inflammatory language, as Newt Gingrich recommends, because that's the sort of thing that Pravda would do. Right? It's not inflammatory to compare your opponent to Russian propaganda, right? That's terrible. I actually really think it's and I say this as a usually a fan of Megyn Kelly and thinking usually she does a very fair, very tough, very thorough job. Her interjection there, your defensiveness speaks volumes. I hate that. That it's a little bit of rhetorical jujitsu or something like that, because what it is basically saying by saying no, you're really saying yes. And there's no way to defend that, because when you say, no, I'm saying no, clearly you just said no. So you really meant twice. It's an insinuation or an accusation of having it's a way of calling somebody a liar without calling them a liar, and basically arguing that we've all heard the Shakespearean line, "Methinks the lady doth protest too much." And sometimes you can see that that kind of behavior, something that seems off the handle or disproportionate or something like that. But the other, your defensiveness speaks volumes. I don't know about you, Greg. I smell some insinuation there that Newt is not always as respectful of women as he ought to be. And I don't, think you're going to accuse somebody of that. Just come out and accuse somebody of that. I don't like this kind of, hint, hint, wink, wink, nudge, nudge sort of thing. But then finally, for what follows, I just want to emphasize, this is me, Jim Garrity speaking, not Greg Corumbus, not Radio America, not National Review. But Greg, if being fascinated with sex is wrong, I'm not sure I want to be right. I don't think that's by itself necessarily a bad thing. What he means is he's fascinated by sex and allegations of sexual scandal or sexual misbehavior. You look at the Kelly file and all the years it's been on television. You look over Megyn Kelly's career. Greg, do you think anybody could reasonably or justifiably conclude Megyn Kelly doesn't care about public policy?
No, she has a lot of policy segments on. That's true.
Right? I mean, come on. Now, where Newt has a somewhat justifiable point here, she keeps using the term sexual predator. Now, a lot of women have come forward and accused Donald Trump of really creepy behavior. His line, grab them by the you-know-what, all the allegations of groping. If you want to call him a creep, if you want to call him a jerk, if you want to call him abusive even, objectified, there are a lot of terms you can throw at Donald Trump. I think when you use the term sexual predator, a lot of people picture the maniac jumping out in the back of a parking garage or something like that. People think of a serial rapist when they use that term. Maybe it's an inaccurate mental connection there. But when Megyn Kelly says Donald Trump is a sexual predator, they're picturing him as a rapist. And as far as we know, according to a court of law, no one has proven that. And that this is one area in which, look, there's a lot of fair shots you can take at Donald Trump. This feels like it's going a little bit over the line. So when Newt says, hey, why aren't you willing to accuse Bill Clinton of that? There are quite a few women who come forward of not just inappropriate sexual behavior, but very aggressive. And in the case of Juanita Broderick, out and out rape against Bill Clinton. Now, never got put on trial for it. Never statute of limitations had run out. But, he seems to have a fair point. But on the other hand, it's not like Megyn Kelly has ignored the sexual scandals and allegations against Bill Clinton. If anything, I think Fox News has done the best job of treating them in a thorough and even-handed way. So just an ugly exchange for both of them. And one that kind of makes them both come across as just fundamentally unfair to the other, angry and all of that. And it just... it's disappointing that this election cannot come to an end fast enough. I think everyone is kind of doubling back on their principles and inverting themselves and twisting themselves into knots and pretzels over this. And in a long, sordid campaign history, watching Newt and Megyn Kelly yell at each other strikes as another low point in this election cycle.
Of many.
Yeah.
There's a lot to choose from. All right, on to the crazy martini now, Jim. And if anyone hasn't noticed, we're now less than 2 weeks away from Election Day. And of course, when you have the major party tickets, both the presidential candidate, the vice presidential candidate are going to spend their times in those critical battleground states that they believe are still up for grabs. Your Florida, North Carolina, Ohio, Perhaps maybe a stop or two in Virginia, maybe New Hampshire, Iowa, Nevada. Mike Pence is going to Utah. This is from Rebecca Berg at Real Clear Politics. With coals still smoldering from Donald Trump's most recent public salvos against Republican leaders, his running mate Mike Pence will stress the case for party unity in Utah, a reliably Republican state suddenly in jeopardy for the Republican nominee. Recent polling has shown Utah trending in favor of a surprise candidate, former House GOP staffer Evan McMullen, who is running unaffiliated and appealing for conservatives who do not wish to support Trump. McMullen, a Mormon who was born in Utah, has gained particular traction with his message among the state's robust Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints community. Pence previewed his theme to Utah voters in an interview Tuesday with MSNBC, saying, quote, "It's time for Republicans to come home to elect the Trump-Pence team to the White House." And so, Jim, if you remember and I know you do, the Utah primary, Ted Cruz absolutely annihilated Donald Trump in that thing. He just has not registered good support there. The math is obvious here. Trump can't afford to lose any states where Clinton has certainly not received favorably. And now he's got to not only protect his flank with Hillary Clinton, but even Evan McMullen, who could be a fly in the ointment here.
Yeah, I think what we can take from this is that Evan McMullen is not just one or two wacky polls that have him up. You don't send the vice presidential nominee to a state 2 weeks before Election Day unless it matters, unless you really need him there, unless you don't send him there if it's for the icing on the cake. This demonstrates the Trump campaign really is worried about Utah. Evan McMullen's campaign can be high-fiving and dancing a jig over this. I would point out, Greg, this is a really surprising turn of events. And I believe later this week, Mike Pence is going to Omaha, Nebraska. People kind of forget, but Nebraska is one of those states that divides the electoral votes by congressional district. And back in 2008, Barack Obama actually won one of them. The one district in the state that is closest to being a swing district, in the just the right circumstances, a Democrat can beat a Republican in it. And that is apparently one that the Trump campaign is worried about. So Mike Pence has to spend some time out in Nebraska, another state most Republicans would never have to worry about. Now, ordinarily, I would complain about this and say these are enormous wastes of time or indicator that every hour you're spending in these deep red places is not a space, a time you're spending in a swing state. But Greg, today Donald Trump is at the grand opening of his hotel in Washington, D.C. That's how he's spending his morning. That's, D.C. is about 90% Democrat, and it's not even really considered a campaign event. It's considered a corporate event for the Trump organization. So, Trump campaign scheduling, at this point, what does it matter anyway?
You know, I was just thinking, with the way that the congressional map looks right now, that Nebraska policy might look pretty appealing to the Republicans right now.
Yeah, keep those swing house districts. You assume that would help him, the swing house districts. Trump's also going to New Hampshire, where he's never led, and Pennsylvania, where he hasn't led since July. So happy election week, everybody. Hope everybody's having a good Wednesday.
Jim, talk to you Thursday.
See you Thursday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, and be sure to tune in again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.